tickets, dreaming about a Premiership Cup. We love our clubs, but they never win. Two flags in 100 years.
The shit house.
If you think we'll be insightful, clever, or just well researched, we're here to say that's not the case. We'll just go out and wing it. We are two guys, one cup.
It is Thursday, the 2nd of April. Welcome to Two Guys, One Cup, an AFL podcast. I am Charlie Clawson, and yes, you're hearing right. I'm doing an intro because Will is out this week with general soreness. He's listed as being 2 weeks. We'll have an injury update later on. I think maybe he's just avoiding talking about the Bulldogs. So in his place, we have the very esteemed Adam Spencer. Thank you, Spence.
Well, he's been listed as unavailable, but I don't know if you're bluffing. I think Anderson might still play.
You think we might risk a fine?
Anderson might still play.
We won't name him, but we'll play him.
The whisper I'm hearing is he is very close to up and about, and you know that the listener is now preparing themselves mentally for a podcast without him. Then you're going to spring Anderson on at the last second.
Well, you're actually not a bad replacement because Will is having a kind of year that you're having with the teams you support. And it's interesting for about the Swans because I think everyone, it's widely acknowledged now that the Swans are either in a rebuild or in a reconstruction or a reimagining, whatever the kind of the term you use when you don't want to lose members.
Or Will Anderson, like, we're just foxing at the moment I think there's a wall and I think there's some writing on it and there's been there for a little while. For me, the precipitous nature of the decline might come as a surprise. Think about last year. In the last game of last year, of the regular season, we had Buddy and Luke Parker both pull out right before the game. Mm. We lost to Hawthorn on the last kick of the game. Most objective media who saw it said if either of those guys had played, we probably would have got past them.
Yeah,
we would have finished fourth.
Yeah.
So we were a kick
away.
Which
would have made this season even more.
Yeah. So we were, but I think you'll look back in a couple of years more and say that what we got out of the team in 2017 and 2018 was pretty impressive rather than, 2019 is just an unbelievable capitulation. I think for the mob we had last year, and everyone, I'm not going to make excuses, the mob we had last year, the injury concerns we had to be a kick away from finishing fourth was as good as you could possibly have got out of that group.
Yeah,
of
and you were playing grand finals like less than 3 years ago.
Yes, exactly.
As well.
We'll talk about that for as long as you want.
So tell me a little bit about how you got into the Swans. Now, my memory of you, when I first met you early 2000s at the Jays, I could have sworn you're a Carlton supporter. Is that true?
So I grew up in Sydney.
Yeah.
I grew up in Balmain territory in the NRL. They're now called the Wests Tigers.
Yeah.
One of the most fashionable, not the plural in Wests just makes no sense trying to pronounce that name. But so my dad was.
It's a good point. Never thought of that.
My dad was dyed in the wool rugby league fan. My dad used to say that 1969 was the best year of his life. His first child was born.
He got his first real six string.
Yeah. First child was born, and Balmain won the grand final, and he used to joke, and don't ask me to rank those two events, right? He loved the Tigers. And I grew up sitting on the hill watching Larry Corowa, the Black Flash, back when you could give someone a nickname that mentioned their skin colour.
A bit problematic these days.
The great Larry Corowa flying down the wing. I remember every time he'd get the ball, everyone would stand up, and as kids we couldn't see the game for a few seconds because you just couldn't see through the sea of people. So I was rugby league. But I remember in the late 1970s, the AFL were playing some demonstration games occasionally in Sydney.
Right.
Possibly as the precursor to thinking a team might eventually move there. My dad, the first game of footy I ever saw, my dad took me along to see St Kilda play Carlton at the SCG. I thought I'd support.
Was this in an off-season?
It's a regular competition
right,
game.
Right, so like they do now where they'll go play over China or whatever.
Yeah, so I thought, we were. Sydney was the China at the time.
The 1970s.
And I thought I'll support the team in black.
Yeah.
Turns out it was actually a very dark blue.
Yeah.
And I supported Carlton that day and they won. And so my sort of tenuous following of football was based around them for a while. Still a league guy when the Swans came to town, so never really got into it.
Yeah.
Remember in 1999, I think it was, when Carlton beat Essendon in the prelim by a point and Fraser Brown does the big tackle and all that. I was still supporting Carlton. I was at that game and pretty excited.
So were you 50-50 on NRL and AFL through that period? Or was
league supporters who don't really follow the game anymore, talk about the Super League schism. In the 1990s, there was a big they basically ran two competitions at the one time. Yeah. It was totally weird. And your favourite player was now playing in a different competition for the Adelaide Rams and other, you know, stalwarts of the rugby league. There was a Perth team and all this, and it went horribly wrong.
I remember that. It's funny.
That's... And that turned a lot of people off the game. And these days, I find rugby league a little bit boring. I think rugby league is the single football code.
Was that Murdoch behind that? No, Packer.
It was Murdoch. It was a Murdoch drive to do the same sort of, you know, one-day cricket jazzing up. But I think rugby league is the single football code that has struggled most with the transition to complete professionalism.
Right.
There's just too many guys on the field for my liking. Now, back in the old days when I used to like rugby league, about 10 minutes into the second half, when the cigarette you'd had at halftime started to kick in, the fat guys would slow down and the smaller guys could weave their magic. Now you've got 120-kilo wingers.
Yeah, and super athletes.
And all they can do is get down there, bomb it in the air, 15 guys jump up, throw their arms at it, and you know, in AFL, you know, umpires make mistakes all the time and you bag them and all that, but you can go a whole season and not see a game that's determined by an umpiring error.
Mm.
And certainly not see a game where you can say, hand on heart, we would have won if it wasn't for the umpiring.
Mm.
Rugby league's managed to concentrate all the controversy in the only part of the game that matters, the super slow-mo down of some guy diving. And you'll hear the commentator saying, well, his arm was moving backwards from an offside position, but it contacted the head of a player who was coming onside from having previously obstructed. So what's the rule? Well, there is no fucking rule. And so the number of times you'll see that game just going on the Monday, just referees have ruined it. So it's quite boring and one-dimensional. Once you start to watch footy, which at the time in the 70s and 80s, television didn't do justice to, once you start to see it live, you fall in love with it. That was my journey. But I didn't really watch much of it. And I remember then watching, I started to fall in love with the Swans.
Mm. So what era? This is late 90s still?
Early 2000s.
Okay, yeah. And so then, that's a good time to fall in love with
it. Yeah, yeah. And I remember watching Carlton play the Swans. Carlton never played at the SCG. They'd always play in Melbourne. So I hadn't seen Carlton play for years. And I watched Carlton at the SCG and Brendan Favola kicked a goal. And I can remember just screaming and calling him a fuckwit and thinking, I've come across.
Okay, yeah, now, that's it. You know.
I've fully transitioned to the, whether it's the dark side or the force or whatever. I'm a swan now. The Swans reached out and did an ambassadors program when I was on Triple J and sort of signed me up then. And so I've been on board.
Both, I don't know if you know, Adam, but I am also, I'm an ambassador for St Kilda
Indeed
Football
you are.
Club. This
Indeed
year
you
is my
are.
First year, so
coincidence?
We're two dignitaries.
I think not yet, exactly. We have diplomatic immunity when we visit each other.
Yeah.
You're in Sydney, but this hotel room is effectively St Kilda territory.
That's right.
The bed you're sitting on.
Yeah, I'm planning not to leave for 3 years.
He's a little piece of a rabbit. Yeah. You're going to Julian Assange today.
Totally, yeah. When St Kilda come try and extract me, I'll be out. You can't. I'm on Sydney. This is specifically Sydney territory.
Indeed. And so, yeah, and that transition. And you're right. I mean, it's not hard to fall in love with the Swans of the early and mid 2000s.
Yeah. So that would have been around about the in between Rocket to Roosie.
The
right?
end of the end of Rocket at Ree, the transition to Roosie, the formations of the Bloods culture.
When you fell in love with the Swans is when I first moved to Sydney. And as a guy who was an AFL dude and could never really get into NRL, you do inadvertently just soak up more Swans action because it's the only team you read about and you can get to games really easily. And I loved going to the SCG to watch football. Such a treat.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, we've joked on this show before, like getting sushi at the SCG was always really interesting.
Yep.
But it was a great place to watch football. But that Bloods culture and seeing that team come together was so exciting.
Hmm.
Like, it was kind of that Bloods culture had been like Shinbone's spirit, had been that legend of the club. But then to actually see a coach weaponize it and make the players own it and become a point of pride, like I think.
And around the time that all sporting teams started to talk about having a culture and standing for something.
No dickheads policy.
Yeah, but to support a team who genuinely had a culture that manifested itself in the team and individuals and like the tough decisions made around Barry Hall by the team and that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
And genuinely came across in the way they played was just beautiful to watch. I mean, you've got guys like Brett Kirk and Jude Bolton.
I was going to ask you, so of that Bloods, does Paul Kelly slip into the Bloods, even though he's kind of pre-Roosie? Is he a Blood?
The fascinating thing about Paul Kelly, I mean, Paul Kelly's in that transition, and we'll talk about this about, you know, what it's going to be like for the next couple of years for the Swans. But I was thinking about this thing. If Paul Kelly's in that early 90s time when the Swans, there were a couple.
He was grunge.
He was very Kurt, very Nirvana. But there were a couple of business people at the who underwrote the Swans to the AFL with $1 million each of their own money, back when that was a colossal sum, because we were on the verge of bankruptcy. Kelly comes in, and Kel wins a Brownlow medal during that period, you know, and he's the sort of link to the 1996 grand final when it starts to...
Yeah, he was the first, he was the first superstar you had of that era.
Yeah.
I mean, you had sort of Gerard Healy and Greg Williams, but it wasn't...
Kappa.
But this was like a homegrown one, guy that you scouted and picked.
Yeah, boy from Wagga.
Yeah.
And so there's that, and then it turns in 96 and goes from there. And so, it's going to be a tough couple of years for the Swans. But if you said to any diehard Swans fan back in 1992, when we're getting 1,800 people to a 1,800 to a game at the SCG, and they're teetering,
and half of those are getting plugger kicking, like when he's playing for St Kilda, kicking torpedoes at their heads, taking three or four out.
Exactly,
cheer squad.
It's tough days, right? Yeah. But if you were told then, okay, here's what's going to happen. We're going to get this plugger guy. We're going to get the most exciting guy on the comp. He'll break the record at your club. You'll play in a grand final in 1996.
And he'll be that marquee and then, getting through the turnstiles.
And then for 23 years, you'll make the finals in 20 of those. You'll win a couple of grand finals. Yeah. You'll get burgled by the umpires in one of them. You'll lose a couple you deserve to. You'll have multiple All-Australians. You'll pick up Brownlow medals.
So, by the way, this is the speech that the devil gives you when he's offering to take your soul.
There is like, not... At the end of that, there's going to be a couple of years where it's going to be pretty tough. There's not a Swans fan who would have broken your hand shaking on that deal.
Yeah. And I don't think there's anyone outside. I mean, it would have to be the most hardcore anti-Swans supporter to not admire the Swans. I think everyone fell in love with that Bloods culture. And the 2012 grand final is possibly my favorite just because... It was, the West Coast rivalry was amazing, but it was just the storylines going into that grand final and the Adam Goods last quarter.
And
it was so unexpected.
And Hawthorn, who go on from that moment to show they're one of the great teams of all time.
Yeah.
You watch that game back, and if ever there's proof that if every guy on the field just does their role as well as they can, you can beat anyone, it's that game.
Yeah.
I mean, they prove themselves over the next few years to be a better team than including us, but to get over the line
in a lot of ways. And it's interesting because was Longmire an assistant under Ruse? That was a handover, a succession, right? So that makes sense because Ruse really pioneered that ultra-defensive modern coaching style that Ross Lyon went on to use. Now John Longmire has evolved it. But they've sort of got to the point now with the Swans where what they would rely on is that really dour defense and accountability.
Intimate, winning contests.
But then you get it, move it quickly in the forward line, and you have a Barry Hall or a Lance Franklin or a couple of superstars up forward that can hurt you on the offense. But what we're seeing now is the slowing down of your marquee player.
And I would think you're also, in terms of the changes to the rules and the way that people want the game played now, which the AFL is completely entitled to do, I don't think you could pick a team in the comp that would hurt more than us. And at the timing of age of players and experienced players and injuries starting to kick in and all that, if you were going to impose that on a team like the Swans, you couldn't pick a worse time in the cycle to do it. That we've now got a generation of incredible number of young kids. We've played more young kids over the last 3 years than anyone. And they're coming through at a time where the experienced guys aren't as effective as they used to be in the game anyway and getting on a bit. It's just a perfect storm.
Pre-bandwagon, not that you are a bandwagoner, but there are definitely Sydney Swans bandwagons after 2005. So pre-bandwagon, what kind of crowds are you getting? So 2000, 2001?
Well, Plugger paid for himself with the crowds.
So you were getting regular sort of
Plugger turned 20,000s into 25s.
Okay.
And now the Swans are regularly pulling 30.
Yeah. But it's also that it's more than that. It's the culture. I always have been surprised living here for so long and going to a lot of Swans games and seeing how the culture of the fans has developed.
Yeah.
It used to be kind of annoying to be a Victorian and seeing a game at the SCG because there was a misunderstanding of the rules. They were very nice to each other. Yep. it was a very pleasant place to go.
You'd be hassling the referees, not the umpires.
Yeah, but you also felt bad when you were barracking because you felt quite uncouth compared to... But now, one of the most parochial kind of crowds going around. It's interesting. I went to a couple of games last year that you lost, and it's really... I'm not used to that. I'm not used to seeing, just rabid, losing Swan supporters. I've seen rabid winning Swan supporters, but to see them after a loss, it's like, oh, they haven't stored that. You've got your, you've established your culture amongst the supporters.
The fans very loyal love it. We don't do that. You'll get some games in Perth and Adelaide,
yeah,
where you will just hear constant booing from the crowds for the entire game. We don't do much of that.
It's more like that, but
decisions will have a bit of a nibble at, but you don't just get that relentless shouting.
It's more of an arrogance. Like, it's more
and
of
the
a this
there.
This
the
is
passion's there
this
now.
Is our ground, and this is. I mean, I was at that Bulldogs game in 2016 where the Bulldogs got pipped you at the post. Johannesson kicked that goal. And I thought the roof was going to come off the place. Yep. Like, there was so much anger because there was this expectation that we're the Swans.
Yep.
We do not lose at home.
But it's been also the beginning of an example of a chink in the armour was that, you know, over the last couple of years, our home record's been nothing like what it should be. And for me, the writing was on the wall earlier this season. And it's interesting about the media concentration that you get and how as a non-Melbourne team we just don't get the media scrutiny, and sometimes that's a good thing, sometimes that's a bad thing. But you look after four games when everyone's ripping into North Melbourne, ripping into Melbourne, Melbourne beat us, ripping into Carlton, well, we got past Carlton but only just, ripping into the Bulldogs, they beat us. So in hindsight, at the time, it looked like we probably had the easiest first 4 weeks of just about any team in the comp. We had the Bulldogs, Adelaide, Melbourne, and Carlton.
That's interesting, isn't it?
That's not a tough opening four rounds, and we won one of those.
Yeah.
Now, because we don't get the sort of scrutiny, it's taken the rest of the league a few weeks to go, oh, they could be struggling a little bit.
Well, I think what it was is we gave you multiple chances to be Sydney again.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, okay, this is a hiccup, and that happens again. Oh, it's a hiccup. It's a hiccup. But then... Yeah, it hasn't really...
That's actually tuberculosis. it's whooping cough.
Yeah, I've held the scan upside down. You actually have cancer. Yeah. No, it's really interesting because I want to know what happens from here because I would love to see how loyal these Swan supporters will be if you have to dip out for a couple of years. Because I went to a Giants game last year and I was expecting to be kind of, you know, that it would be filled with people just getting free tickets or whatever. For that 15,000 strong crowd, they knew their football. They were so into it. And I was like, oh, holy shit, like this is the expansion team. I imagine after 20 plus years of success, you've got some like, you know, rusted on Swans supporters now. Like it's not a question of survivability. Like the Swans are an established team.
Yeah, by definition, when you go through a tough time, your crowds are going to be smaller than when you go through an easy time.
What's your membership?
60,000 we had last year, which is the first time ever. I mean, it's an incredible story. I mean, the Swans have more members. You take the NRL and the A-League football, take the top three clubs there and add them together, and the Swans have more members. Now, there's a little bit of a caveat because the Western Sydney Wanderers used to play in a stadium that was limited by size, but you could add, I think it used to be the Wanderers and Souths, them together and get 50. We had 60.
But how many seats does the SCG have?
48,000 completely full. But there's South Melbourne contingents I think it's like 12.
Okay, so you've got interstate.
Yeah, about 12,000.
I was going to say otherwise someone's done some amazing marketing. Once you get over 48,000.
Yeah, well, we've got a lot of dead members. We've got post the Banking Royal Commission. A few of the guys who got named in the Banking Royal Commission have been in charge of our membership base for a while. And there's a few members who we are still charging fees.
Membership fraud.
We're charging fees even though they're dead. We thought if you can do it for insurance, you can do it. No, and the Swans have notionally 1 million. When they survey Australians on what teams you support in various codes, the Swans have 1 million supporters. So that sort of second favourite team or favourite team in a sport you don't really follow. And that's amazing in this town, in an NRL town.
Yeah.
And the AFL are very, you know, rightly happy with what we've done. And it's tough. You would know around the SCG, there's these major developments going on with light rail and on. The Swans last year were training on a patch of dirt that at its widest was 82 metres. and you're trying to practice what you're going to do.
One buddy kick.
Yeah. And well, you're practicing what you're going to do at the MCG that weekend, which is 130 metres across. And honestly, you looked at the Swans, the ground we were training on this year, the Swans went down to Henson Park one day and someone came along and said, no, sorry, you can't be here. Like literally like a Sunday morning, you know, when mates are having a Sunday, someone texts, no, there's soccer here, let's go across to Smith Oval. There wouldn't be reserve grade teams in the VFL training under those. So it's remarkably...
Well, Buddy wasn't training though, was he? So no. Maybe that's the real reason Buddy didn't train last year. It's because, well, what's the point? One kick and I've done the entire, cleared the entire field.
You could practice your right foot a bit, bud, let's be honest. But there's a lot to love about it there. Now, realistically, less people will come to the games during a tough patch. But over the last 20 years, you mean those dip-out crowds might be in the low 20,000s.
Yeah.
20 years ago, those dip-out crowds would have been 10,000.
Right.
So certainly there'll be fly-by-nighters and people are going to give it a bit of time, but the loyal base is double in size what it was a decade ago.
So when you fall in love with the Swans and you know in the 2000s, is just through the exposure of following them, does that sort of educate you on where they came from and like past players? I mean, I knew you had an awareness, but like that deep understanding of
And I think it's inherent in a club that's moved. I mean, you know, and Will would know all that about the, you know, the Bulldogs and mergers and all that sort of stuff. And
the Saints.
Something as titanic as moving to Sydney and almost being bankrupt and that sort of stuff. And I do know the club are big on new kids who come in, get given a copy of a book called In the Blood, and you're brought up to speed. And it's one of the reasons also you're very, very, you're practically never here. In a town where every 15 seconds an NRL player is like taking a photo of his cock and just putting it on Instagram and then realise...
a dog to lick his balls
Gee, it just never occurred to me that might have some sort of repercussions.
The worst thing is a player might tackle a pig on the SCG,
I genuinely think there's a sense in the group that we're custodians of this, and if a few of us went out and just punched on with the cops or whatever, and we could kill this club. It's a tough gig in this town. The flip side for the guys, which is great, is... You would know. I mean, Buddy wouldn't be able to go to the shops in Melbourne.
Yeah.
Right? But you've got guys
like... he stands out anywhere, but...
But you've got guys like Luke Parker who just go for a surf at Maroubra and the full hassle of their fandom might be a couple of times a week someone comes and goes, oh, if my son could have a photo, it'd be the greatest moment in his life.
Well, yeah,
no trouble.
As you know, because you contacted me privately, Will and I didn't know who Jake Lloyd was. No.
You didn't know
who... And to be honest, I still can't tell you what he looks like. I have no idea.
No.
He's got brown hair?
Ish. Yeah, that's not important. Yeah, number 44. Don't worry about it. Yeah, no, I love it. But
yeah, fastest. Yeah. No, we've read up on him. Fastest to 100 games, best and fairest.
All Australian. Don't worry about that.
Nah.
Don't let any of that worry.
We're not known for our research. Yeah. Okay, now, Spence, there's a player who's captured Will and I, our imagination. Well, actually, maybe the opposite. He's released our imagination.
Okay.
Who is a Swans legend is Jesse White.
Ah, yes. The great Jesse White.
What were your views on Jesse White? Do you want me to open that for you?
Yeah, that'd be great.
You talk, I'll open your beer for you.
We're staying in the Hilton Hotel.
We're not staying together. I've just visited Adam like a prostitute, that's all.
Well, you did do that. Yeah, I did so that Charlie could set up the equipment because I was coming from another event. I did amend my booking to attach his name to it so that you could go down.
It felt very seedy, I've got to be honest with you.
Can I have a key to room ...
Although, I don't know what's more embarrassing. I'm going up to your room to have sex with you for money or I'm going up to record a podcast.
And there's no reason why it couldn't be both. There are
the night is young.
Think about the name of your podcast, my friend. This stuff is out there. Jesse White was a great guy. He never quite realised his potential with us and probably the same at Collingwood. He was one of those transition... I'm pretty sure Jesse White was an elite basketballer who came across and just one of those guys who would show glimpses of precocious talent.
Yeah, he was a tease.
And just never quite...
I can't remember if I've actually told this story on the podcast before, but I got a friend of mine secured us some corporate tickets or through the Swans Coterie or whatever. And so we went out to ANZ Stadium to watch the game. And me and my friend just thought it would be fun to rag on Jesse White.
Why not?
For the whole game. And so we kept like, you know, check your tattoos, Jesse, blah, blah. Not really clever stuff, but we just, it was more the point was it was a running joke. Let's make fun of Jesse White. And then at the end of the game, we stood up and I hear this girl behind me go, I just wish they wouldn't pick on my poor Jesse all game.
Oh.
And it was Jesse White's girlfriend.
Well played.
And we didn't know whether or not we should, because how do you defend it? How do you say, look, there was no reason we were picking on your boyfriend. It just was fun.
Yeah, we're just being dicks. I'm so sorry. Yeah.
My friend who organised the tickets called me a couple of days later and said, oh, by the way, if I'm going to organise your tickets, can you not slag a player off the whole game? If you're sitting in the wives and girlfriends section.
Let me tell you a quick story that unites two people we have talked about, completely unconnected to anything, but Plugger and Buddy Franklin. So a couple of years ago, at the 2014 Swans Best and Fairest, when Buddy's going to receive the Coleman Medal at the Bob Skilton Medal Night, and Plugger came along to present the Coleman Medal to Buddy, and it's just the crowd's just going wild, and I as the MC of the night get to ask a few questions of Plugger.
Was this Skinny Plugger?
This is the last of the old Plugger.
Okay,
and he came back a year later, and everyone's like, "My God, he's dying."
Pie cut Plugger,
I got to interview Plugger, which was just wonderful. Yeah. Asking him questions, and the crowd are just loving every second of it. And I asked him a bit about, you know, let's be honest, someone like this man you're about to present the medal to, the modern-day full forward, a lot more mobile, different to the game has evolved, hasn't it, Tony? And Plugger's reflecting on it, you know, and he said in front of this crowd, you know, mate, sometimes I see Buddy run down to the defensive 50 to get the ball. When I was playing, mate, I didn't go that far on fucking holidays. A 1,000 people just go, oh, Plugger's dropped the F-bomb. I can die happy.
There's so many of those players, though, from that era. Like, there was no defensive side to the game. That was you just isolate your superstar, like Gary Ablett or Jason Dunstall and Plugger. I mean, I grew up watching Plugger at Moorabbin, when it was like suburban football, essentially. And it was unfair what he was able to do to defenders. He was just that big and strong and terrifying.
Brutal.
Like, it was his physicality, because what would he be, 6'3"? Not actually really that huge by today's standards. But he was just...
He must have been 110 kegs.
Yeah, definitely. I think they had him listed at 101, but that can't be right.
Fitzy tells a great story about when his first year at the Swans, he's just been drafted and he's there and he's doing a tour of the rooms, and down the end of the corridor, he just hears this, "Wah, yeah!" And people are clapping and cheering. And he walks down into the dressing room and there's Plugger with a cricket bat and he's raising it. Turning around like he's just, you know, he had just recorded his first ever total skin test scores of 100+. And he was saluting the crowd to a round of applause from his fellow players. The game has changed.
So what was the story with his weight loss? Was there an inside? Because he went back to the Swans and was doing some goal kicking and coaching, right?
Plugger's a very, very focused guy.
Right.
And he knows a few of the Swans' quite senior management. And one of them one day said offhand that he thought Plugger had packed on a couple of kilos. And from what I understand, with just a drive and focus and determination, just lost it.
Right.
And it looks unbelievable.
He looks unrecognizable.
Almost ghostly.
Yeah.
But incredibly. You see photos of him taking a few kicking drills at the SCG and getting
the thigh up.
And it's the great what if, isn't it?
If he'd actually lost that weight when he was a player.
But was
he could have been a Buddy Franklin, maybe. Who knows?
But was it the extra 20 kilos bearing down on you when you're the defender dropping back into the hole that made him so scary?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, the thing about Plugger that often gets overlooked is he was really skillful and fucking quick, quick over 20 metres.
Yeah.
So, I mean, if he had lost that weight, then maybe he turns into, it's probably not a great comparison, but like a Jordan DeGoey.
Yeah.
Someone like that. Like, or probably more like Gaz Senior. That's who I reckon he would have been like.
On the night when he was presenting the award to Buddy, I was reflecting on his career, and he won a few Coleman medals himself. There was one year where Plugger kicked, I'm remembering the numbers, it's one year where Plugger kicked 137 goals and didn't win the Coleman medal.
Was that playing for the Saints or Swans?
For the Saints.
Yeah, that's right.
Dunstall kicks 141.
Yeah, and could have kicked 150, but it was a game against Richmond. He kicked 17 and then handballed off two of them or something like that.
But imagine kicking 137. Imagine a year where two players go over 130 goals. And the flip side of that, there's the great story about Rod Carter, Rod the Tilt Carter from the Swans. His nickname was Tilt because he tilted his head to the side.
Yeah.
And he was your full back in those days and would often play a game where he didn't leave the defensive 50.
Yeah.
He holds the AFL record for longest streak of games before his first goal.
Right.
And Tilt Carter kicks his only career goal in something like his 281st game. because he's just tagging, he's just on this forward who eventually runs back and Tilk goes with him and with him and with him and suddenly takes a mark inside 50 and kicks a goal. And as he's jogging with this guy back up to the other goal square and the crowd are just losing it, the other guy says, "It's your first goal, isn't it?" "Yeah." "How many games?" "Oh, I think it's 280. "Oh, fuck me." I'm going to be the trivia
you're
question.
The guy. Yeah.
I'm the guy. So, mate, they're an amazing club and they're great. But the other day when it was clear what was going on, my daughter, my 14-year-old, who's loved them for like 4 years and like passionately loves them, and I said, I think it's going to be a tough couple of years, you know. And she said...
How old is she, 14?
14.
All right, so she's only known success.
Yeah. "Dad, I'm going to keep supporting. We're going to keep going to the games." And she said, "It would be disloyal not to."
They got to tell her not to do it. Tell her that if just get out.
Get on.
Oh, she still can.
Get on GWS now.
Jump off. Get jump on. Off the ship. Well, we had Alex Williams on the show last year who was a Richmond supporter right up until 2016 and then jumped onto GWS. And then a year later, Richmond win the flag. I always wonder that. Like, I mean, I've never felt capable of leaving the Saints. I do think there is a loyalty thing. I also think I'm just too far gone now.
Yeah.
Like, what am I going to do? Like, it's like, I think about that with, I've been, you know, with my wife now for 15 years. It's like, oh, imagine being single again, like having to talk to people. What
careful.
The fuck am
okay,
I going to do?
I thought you were saying it because I'm thinking.
No.
I'm thinking about jumping across, but I've invested so much.
The idea just terrifies me because it's like, oh, I can't be bothered starting up a conversation. Same with the football club. I've got to get to know these players their culture.
And could you? And I mean, I had an interest in football that manifested itself in caring more about how Carlton was going than... than other teams, and I could probably name the years they won grand finals in the period that I knew about them, but there was no deep investment.
Well, that's a thing, and there's also the flip side of if you've been following a team for a long time, it's not just about the wins and the premierships, although I imagine that must be... It must be amazing.
It's pretty good. In 2012, I was at the grand final in 2012, and it is miraculous, and it's just everything.
Were you there 2005 as well?
Yeah. And it's Goodsy on one leg and the whole thing. And got to party late at night with the guys and all that, but flew back, got an upgrade on the way. So I fly back business class. I'm going, this is ridiculous. And drinking on the plane, I get home. Turn the TV on and Fox Footy, as you know, just shows literally the ball is bouncing in the grand final on their replay of it. So I just watch that. And then they show it again immediately after. Right? So I tape it the first time so I've got the full game. Yeah. The second time I watch it and I only hit record with 15 minutes to go when we're 2 goals down and we kick. So that's my executive. So if I don't... And for
running short on time, you want a quickie?
Honestly, a month later, I could roll the 15-minute thing and I could commentate it in advance. Goes back, Robert Thompson, watch this handball from LRT to Hanover and just like burning it into my DNA.
There was a period of time where if you visited Will's place, you would be shown highlights from the grand final. I remember Scott Dooley texting me. Scott Dooley playing James Heard in the upcoming James Heard biopic.
Yes, absolutely.
Texted me to say he'd spent New Year's at Will's place, and he said, "You know, I'd been in the house less than 5 minutes before Will took me to his office to show me the last quarter of the 2016 Grand Final."
New Year's Eve, that's a tough ask.
Yeah, but I just wonder what that must feel like. I mean, I have so much envy, but at the same time,
do you have any sense with the way your boys are tracking now this year or sometime soon? You could be potentially
It's just this year is like a real anomaly because everyone wrote us off. We were tracking quite well 2016, 2017. I think it was 12 wins and 10 wins, or 12 and 11, or something like that. And then last year, really fucking had a terrible year.
I saw headlines at the beginning of this year saying a Saints wooden spoon is inevitable.
Yes. Yeah, and it's still could be. I mean, who knows what the fuck happens. And also, because you look at what happened, though. Before we even bounced the ball, Hanbury is being rebuilt. Carlisle's out. Roberton's out. You know, none of our draft picks. We drafted kids that were still in rehab last year. We had nothing really going for us.
And that's injury rehab.
Injury, yeah. Not, exactly. Not NRL.
Not meth.
Rehab, yeah. And so it looked,
he's lost a lot of weight in the off season.
But even as a Saints supporter, like I sort of bought into the narrative, but then I saw a couple of preseason games and was like, well, maybe we're not as bad. And the competition is so close this year.
Oh yeah.
That it doesn't take much for you to fall down or climb up.
Yeah,
I mean, do you remember North Melbourne last year with a surprise packet and now look at them?
Yeah, for me, I struggle to see a grand final outside of the four teams: Geelong,
Collingwood,
Richmond, GWS.
Yeah.
There's an argument that if things bounce the right way, West Coast at home are tough and could upset that apple cart. But having seen enough of this season, I can't. You're going to go very close. A Geelong GWS grand final, you're going to go very close to that.
I wonder. I mean, are Richmond are a better chance than West Coast? I mean, West Coast are the premiers and Richmond have injuries. So it's bizarre that we both had them in our top four and not West Coast.
Yeah, there seems to be a sense to which people have... The games Richmond have lost are a little bit more, yeah, well, your best fullback went down last week, etc. West Coast, is there a degree to which people have worked them out?
Well, I think that we were also surprised with them being good. Yeah. Like, it came... the last few years, well, maybe not with Richmond, but Bulldogs and West Coast, it felt like two teams arrived ahead of schedule. Like West Coast
are a very solid team when you look at
really good, you know, and they've got the home ground advantage.
Yeah, you can't have, you know, Gaff and Yo and Sharon Byrne and
Sharon.
and Shuey and Kennedy in a bad team.
Yeah, that's true.
There's a lot of class there.
Yeah, I know, but I think it was just more we did.
My good mate Will Schofield.
Why is he your good mate?
Because I caught up with him. I caught up with Will.
You asked him about the Sox?
I was in Perth last year, and I'd done a gig at the casino venue in Perth. And if you want to hire me for any gigs, Adam Spencer, adam@adamspencer.com.au, one of the best in the business. And I'd done a gig and was treating myself to dinner in the restaurant there, and a woman I'd known from years ago said hi.
Mm-hmm.
And great to see her. And they literally sat down next to me and started a conversation. She introduced me to her boyfriend, Will. And I think I contacted you guys and said, in the spirit of Two Guys, One Cup,
yeah.
I had no idea who he was. What do you do with yourself? I play football. Oh, really? When I play. Oh, really? For West Coast? Oh, Will, nice to meet you, Will Schofield. Great. Desperately trying to remember his name. I had a couple of drinks. He had a big game coming that weekend, so he wasn't drinking. And then...
I'll be honest with you. He's a bit of Jake Lloyd. I'm trying to think of what he looks like. Is he
Will
blonde
Schofield,
or is he brunette?
Balding, bearded, fullback, plays alongside Shannon Hearn, does a lot of run off the back.
No fucking idea who that is.
Okay. Handy player.
Did he play in the grand final last year?
Handy played in the grand final last year. He was one of the guys switching forward.
Yeah.
When they almost got caught out?
Yeah,
that was
because
he was transitioning
forward.
Oh, that's
right. He was the guy who did the interview who talked about... It was his plan to run up through the middle.
To kick the goal. To kick the winning goal.
That is I don't know if we've talked about that. That audio is some of the most amazing.
Because you know it's a close game. You know it's a close game.
Yeah.
But there are so many toss of the coin moments in the last couple of weeks of that game. And he's racing forward. But McGovern just shanks one and puts it straight down a Collingwood guy's throat. Mm. And Will Schofield's 50 metres out of position.
Yeah, no man's land.
Doing everything he can. Thinking, I'm the guy. I'm going to be the guy, oh my God, this is not going to look good on the Monday review.
Yeah.
But I asked him about Sockgate that night, and he was the one who explained that at West Coast.
And he was like, finally. I mean, I know I've just played in a winning grand final team, but finally someone's asking me about socks.
He was the one who explained that with West Coast, they are so big on the socks, they make you think about, you know, the people who have to clean up your socks and that sort of stuff. So they'll send messages around the group occasionally saying, socks last week, not good enough. And maybe it's that sort of culture. For us, it was the Bloods. With them, think about the dude who's got to pick up your dirty socks.
Apparently, that's the Port Adelaide philosophy as well. Ken Hinckley's big on pick up your rubbish.
Well, it's the whole All Black thing. The All Blacks, the two most senior players in the All Blacks, stay around after test matches and clean the dressing room.
Right.
That sort of stuff.
Yeah.
Whereas at Melbourne, they get some staff.
They'll get Peter Dutton to organise a visa to get some...
Yeah, they get an au pair.
Yeah. To come over and mind their kids after a game.
Yeah.
So who are your... it's hard to go past Geelong. Do you have any other kind of like fancies on this year? Who have you liked?
At their best, GWS are remarkably good.
Injuries are...
I've always found it interesting with GWS how... at their best, they're as good or better than any team in the comp. When they are firing, there's just so much skill in that. I remember a couple of years ago in 2017, we beat GWS at GWS. Big game, buddy kicks massive goal. And people said, you know, oh, yeah, a few injuries for GWS. And I remember looking up the details at the time and tweeted that that injury-ravaged GWS team who we beat a couple of years ago in a game, on the night that they were injury-ravaged, had players who had been in their respective draft years pick 1, 1, 1, 1, 2, 4, 5, 7, 9, 11, 13 or something. Like 12 guys who were top 10 or on the border of top 10, plus three guys who'd won 5 grand finals between them.
Yeah.
Mumford, Shaw, Stevie Johnson. But the list they've got, even having lost a couple of guys, is just...
phenomenal.
Stunt. Like,
it's the Ferrari, mate.
Unbelievable. The interesting thing with them is you see the occasional game where you sometimes wonder... if you've got so many guys on the paddock who've been the very best player in every team they've ever played in, so they haven't been the guy whose job has been throw your body on the ball and get the shit kicked out of you here because we just, you know, take a hit for the team. And I'm not saying they're not scared or soft, but I don't know if it's in the DNA of a lot of their players to just selflessly...
they're all creatives.
Yes. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And they don't have a lot of kind of role player.
And they're never the guy whose job has been to take a bullet for other guys in the team.
Yeah, that's true.
And some of your team need guys like that. Yeah. Most of your great teams have players who've never been the best player.
It's like the dream team, you know, like the US dream team. Who do you bench?
Yeah, exactly. But most great teams have grunt players who know my job, you know, who are fighting for their spot every week.
They're getting that. Like, that's drafting... De Boer, I always go Matt De Boer. It's De Boer, not De Boer, right?
Yeah.
Players like that, and I think you'll see more as they lose more and more of their Dylan Shield types, because they will get cherry picked for the next couple of years. I think that they will be they can be smart in terms of.
But there's a window for them right now. Like a couple of years ago when those brilliant players were 23, 24, they're now 26, 27.
Yeah. If they don't do it, this could be disastrous. If they go through this era without a flag, then it's a really hard sell to be the second team in Sydney, starting from scratch and to get people excited again. I mean, it sounds bizarre, but I would, as long as the Saints can win one first, I'm happy to see. Like if GWS win one, I'll be like, for fuck's sake, there's another team.
Yeah. They've invented a team.
They've invented a team that's won a flag. Yeah. And my fucking...
When the great GWS Frio rivalry finally ends after 5 consecutive
the Gold
grand
Coast
finals.
GWS dynasty.
When the Frio GWS era ends because the surprise pack at Gold Coast
has come storming in.
knock out the Northern Territory Demons in the prelim.
I want to see GWS succeed, and not just because, you know, I love AFL, but I actually, like I said, when I went to that game last year, I was really impressed with, because I started off just sitting in the outer with the regular supporters, and then Alex took me into, like, because he's a member and an ambassador, and so I got to meet all their kind of like insiders. Well, not insiders, but they're, you know, people in that members and whatever. And they were, I guess they, I'm assuming a lot of them were kind of expats or, you know, like yourself, had barracked for another team, but now they're in Sydney. But they were like, they knew their shit. Like, I didn't hear any idiotic comments.
No.
They were very passionate and they were very...
For me, my limited experience with GWS, the passion of the fans can't be questioned. The knowledge can't be questioned. You sometimes look at the size of the home crowd. Mm. And it's so hard building from nothing. But I sometimes want, you'll see them play a genuine top 4 contender at home in a prime time, and the crowd's 12,000.
Yeah.
And you wonder how far along the journey should you be before you're pulling at least regularly filling a 19,000 seat stadium.
Well, I guess how long did it take the Swans to get to that? Oh, I guess you had the Jared Healy era, which kind of
and also I don't
Warwick Capper would have packed him in,
and I think it's tough to compare across eras about how all that, you know, what that means at that time and you know, these days when you've had the injection they've had and the structure they've been given, sometimes, you know, if you're going to be harsh, you'd sometimes think maybe an extra 5,000 fans at a game wouldn't be unreasonable to expect.
Yeah, I mean, it just takes time to kind of build that romance. Like, you did have the Gerard Healy, Greg Williams era, but that faded pretty quick when Edelston left. And then it was pretty barren. They got, you know, Barass up there. And
look, I don't want to be controversial, but it's going to be a tough couple of years for the Swans. And maybe it's time to bring Jeffrey Edelston back.
The Swanettes?
Yeah. Having said that, he's not dead, is he?
I mean, who knows? I feel like he's been dead for the last 10 years.
He's still alive, isn't he? Yeah, he's still...
I think he's still alive. Yeah. But, you know, the vision, the evidence when you look at him may tell you otherwise. I'm sure he's married to some stripper.
Isn't
right
he still... is he back with...
I don't know. I don't really follow the exploits of Jeffrey Edelston, the chick who walked naked through Melbourne. I don't know. I mean, probably best left to history. What was it? Lynette? No, what was his first wife? The glamorous one when he was... Lynn Edelston?
Yes, yeah. Yes,
no, that's Bryn. I'm thinking of Bryn. There was Bryn. There was Lynn and Bryn.
Leanne.
That's it. Jeff she and was Leanne. She was the Lady Di.
Exactly.
Jeffrey Edelston's... partners. She had all the grace and the
If Elton John was going to sing a eulogy to one of Jeffrey Edelston's partners, goodbye, Leanne Edelston. Do I never hear you at all?
I mean, look, at least bring the pink helicopter back. It would be great to see Buddy.
I'll tell you one other quick story about Swans royalty before we get on to our
tips.
Oh, mate, this is going to be great. We are Red Kite, a charity that I do work for, a wonderful charity that provide financial assistance to families and who've got kids going on the cancer journey. And we have an annual game at the SCG.
Indeed.
We have a little celebrity game. Quick side note, if it's ever raining, the celebrity game becomes a shootout. Just shoot
are you
for
about
goal
to pot me?
Competition. and
I get the feeling you're going to pot me.
You shoot from 10 metres directly in front, 30 metres directly in front. If you get the 10, if you get there, you go to 30, then to 50.
Yep.
And there was one year where you were the first person up, and we'd been told you really got to hurry. You went in from...
What was it, 20 metres out directly in front?
I think you might be flattering yourself.
Oh, come off it. It wasn't 10. It was about 20. Look, here's the deal, right? In the warm-up, in the indoor cricket nets, I was drilling them from all angles.
Lacing them.
And I was so confident that for some reason, at the last minute, this is why you should stick to a routine, because I'd been sticking to my routine in the warm-up. Then we got out there, directly in front, 20 metres out. And for some reason, I turned to Joel Jackson and I was like, mate, I'm going to go for a torpedo. I said, how can I miss? I'm 20 metres out, directly in front. Let's give the fans what they want. I'll put this into the top tier. So I put it into the taut motion and it just comes, slices right off the left boot and drills. I've never seen, even with the professional players on the ground, I've never seen a ball cannon into the point post so hard. Like, it was so loud.
It almost Lee Matthews style snapped.
But the crowd, because there might have been like 25,000 people there. I remember the crowd going, ooh, like they'd just seen a dude break his leg. And the best part about it was my manager was up in the stands watching. And so after the game, I've had a shower and I've gone up. And I was sitting with him and he looked like he'd seen a ghost. And I was like, what's wrong? And it's like, I was watching you in the warm-up. You're drilling him like, no problem. A drop punt, why did you go for the torpedo? And I was like, I don't know. The entertainer in me, the rush of blood.
At the time, your manager was in the stands on the phone to a couple of clubs. No, don't worry. So the very first year we did that and Warwick Capper was good enough. Cap flew himself down from the Gold Coast.
Yeah.
Flew himself down from the Gold Coast to play at his own expense. Lovely stuff, right? Turns up there and you know how when you're a kid kicking in the little warm-up area out on the grass there, if you take a mark, you'll call out the name of your favourite, you know? Yeah, buddy! And the ball, there's a ball that I'm sort of waiting under and... Someone jumps in front of me and grabs it, screaming out, "Kappa!" It was him.
Yeah, of course it was.
Warwick Kappa calls his own name when he takes a grab, and then in the stands later, he's there in these leopard skin, tight sort of athletic pants, and a mate of mine who was there with us who doesn't know much about footy. So go and say hi. My mate goes over to Warwick Kappa and says, "Hey, Warwick, my name's Alex. Lovely to meet you." Warwick says, "Oh, yeah, mate, how you going? Yeah, it's a bit of shit. So what do you do with yourself, Alex?" "Yeah, great, great, great." "So I'm going to get you to give Alex's answer and you're going to say,
okay,
I've just completed a PhD
okay
in petroleum engineering.
Okay.
Okay, so, yeah. Oh, really? Yeah. So, Alex, what are you doing with yourself, mate?
I've just completed a PhD in petroleum engineering.
Oh, really? Smart cunt like me, are you? Literally, at that pace, I saw my friend like that buckle and just walk back holding his side, cramping, like at that speed, at that boom.
How is Wazza the Wiz? How is he regarded amongst like the old school of the Swannies? Is he welcome back with open arms, or is it sort of?
Mate, for that team in that era, he kicked 100 goals one season with the Swans, and then followed it up with a 98 or something towards the end of the era where anyone kicked 100, and in teams that weren't necessarily, they were reasonable teams, but I don't think anyone can. And in the celebrity game we played, he's just run around like a bit of a dick, but then he did take one mark on an impossible angle.
Yeah.
Never looked like missing it.
Yeah, just right. Boom. It is amazing when you watch those Legends games and stuff, though. Like, some player will be so out of shape, like a Derek Kickett or something like that, but they'll still have the skills. Like, you can just sort of see, like, they don't lose it. They lose all the other stuff, but the skills and the
muscle
instinct.
Memory is still. And the great thing for them is that Legends game, because you're still visioning them back, that Legends game is being played at a pace where suddenly their skills can really assert themselves.
Exactly. Like,
no offense to Derek, I don't think you'd. If you ran on in your 22 these days, you'd probably struggle.
Well, let's give Red Kite a bit more of a plug. So, out of all those Red Kite charity matches you ran, were there any particular highlights or any hangers or injuries or controversies?
Very first year we played, Will played, and back when his body was a bit more up to the task of contact football, and the two girls from Sister to Sister, pop act.
Was that I don't remember those.
Pre-Veronica's.
Right.
Two sisters. Yeah, two girls.
What genre?
Two sisters. Girl
like,
pop.
But hip-hop? Okay,
No, just real pop.
Okay, sister to sister.
And
were they related?
Loved the girls. They were sisters.
Okay, good.
And they were, in the old numbers, they would not be over 5 foot.
Oh, okay, right, great.
Small girls. And there's one moment there where one of them had the ball and is on the opposite team to Will. And Will leans out and really sort of gently, grabs the so grabs her arm and grabs the ball with the other arm, and he's just, just gonna just take the ball. And as he does that, someone sort of clips Will from behind and he spins around while he's got his arm. And I was close enough to see what happened. He genuinely was trying to gently, as he grabbed this 5 foot girl and slung her into the ground. And being a footy player of old, the instinct kicked in. He's just suddenly had the ball and then kicked it on.
Yeah.
So it could not have looked worse. Like, Will's 6'3".
Yeah.
6'3" guy has come in, monstered this 38-kilo girl, dispossessed
her, ball.
Then hit someone up the middle, and then just had this look on his face as he realised what he'd done. It was just priceless. One year, Shannon Knoll
is
running through the middle, looking good, doesn't hear the call of you're hot, gets laid out in a tackle.
By who?
Guy Sebastian.
Fantastic.
It was so, dude, I beat you at the Opera House. And Guy Sebastian is a nuggety athletic guy.
Yeah, Adelaide boy, right?
Poleaxed. Like, cut Knoll's in half.
Is Shannon Knoll is not from AFL territory?
Yeah.
He should have had awareness.
But, mate, when Guy Sebastian comes from the clouds, there's nothing you can do.
God, it's a shame both times I took part in Red Kite, it was rained out. I would love to get, like, ironed out by Daryl Summers or something. All right, let's have a look at the games coming up this weekend.
Week ahead.
Well, I think there's a game tonight, but this probably won't go up till Friday morning. Apologies for everyone who bases their weekly tips on the Two Guys, One Cup.
And also don't panic, because there is no game tonight.
Isn't there? Oh, no. Okay, great. All right, I thought there was a game tonight.
No.
All right, brilliant.
Brought to you by Movement Watches this week?
No. Okay. We have no sponsor at the moment. We're brought to you by adamspencer.com.
There you go, by the Hilton Hotel Group in Sydney.
Okay, so tonight, the Pies take on Port Adelaide at the MCG, at Marvel Stadium, which should be an interesting game.
It should be. They're an interesting lot, Port Adelaide, aren't they, this season? Because there would have been reasons to think they were going to find it harder this year.
Can't trust Port Adelaide.
Than a disappointing season last year. I can't see.
Collingwood just look awesome. I think they're my preseason pick, and there's not a lot that has changed that for me, particularly with the injuries to Richmond. West Coast seem off the boil at the moment, and I reckon Collingwood are the informed team, especially... Well, do you... I mean, you come out of that Anzac Day game, which was just an absolute cracker. Like, one of the best ever Anzac Day games. One of the best ever home and away games. Do you come out of that just, like, pumped, or do you, are you flat
but
after
I felt that was a game where Collingwood were the better, and Melbourne fought back hard... Essendon fought back hard, but...
Yeah,
Collingwood were the better of those two teams. They didn't. They didn't.
You didn't think you taxed themselves?
No.
All right. Pies. You know what? I'm going to pick Port Adelaide because I feel like the Pies, after such an emotional big win with the booing and all that kind of stuff, they're going to be primed for an upset. And that's my. I've got to put the mic between my knees. That's my lock of the week.
And that's an image.
You never want to.
That's my image. I'm never going to burn off my retina. You leaning forward.
Tucking my mic between my knees so I can clap my hands.
Hello.
All right, Saturday, the Demons take on the Hawks. This is at the MCG. Very disappointing Melbourne against a very beaten-up Hawthorn. 18th versus 11th.
Oh, yeah.
Fuck.
People are now starting to say about Melbourne what I was saying for a long time. They just
they're shit.
There's no team who, last season, there was no team who could monster a poor team and then not turn up against a good team as much as Melbourne. I mean, we played Melbourne.
Would you say, Adam, downhill skiers?
But last year against Melbourne, we beat them in Melbourne, and admittedly they didn't kick well and we were probably lucky to get it, but we beat them. That was the game, the horrible game that Alex Johnson did his knee again. And in the first quarter, Nick Smith ripped his hammy off the bone and isn't back yet. So we lost two defenders in the first quarter, a game that if they'd won, they would have gone to fourth, having, before that game, not defeated a top eight side. Melbourne's year last year was overblown. They were massacring poor teams by hundreds of points.
I don't think it was overblown.
They went over to West Coast with three rounds to go. They played one decent home and away game all season.
But I think it's the same rationale you used for West Coast, which is no team that contains Max Gawn, Todd Viney, Clayton Oliver, you know, can be that bad. They've got so many guns. I think it's...
Is there a lack of toughness about them?
It's between the ears, mate. Another footy cliche.
Yeah, there's just a lack of... When they think they're on and we're going to murder these guys, but who's the guy in Melbourne who throws his body on the grenade?
No, they've got a couple of those. Clayton Oliver and Todd Viney are both tough inside mids, although... Todd Viney, I'm not sure if you saw... You said you didn't see last week's games, but Sydney Stack, the little Richmond rookie, he laid out Todd Viney, one of the most purest and sweetest hip and shoulders, like, in the last 5 years. And they did that. That was Richmond's smallest player doing that to Melbourne's hardest player, and he went down. He had to get helped off the field, and I think it's sort of indicative of their season. But should they beat Hawthorn, who have got a lot of injuries? Hawks just got over Carlton. They're limping along. They're just like an old boxer, aren't they, Hawthorn? You just feel like they're against the ropes and they're swaying and stuff, but they've just got so much knowledge. Maybe they can just land under the chin.
They're like a guy who's had several too many beers, knows the hotel he's staying in is just it's too close that any cab's going to drive him. Fuck, it's a couple of blocks further than he'd really like to walk, and he's just bouncing off shop windows, eventually going to get there. Yeah, Hawks for mine. Look at you.
I'll pick the Hawks as well.
Okay.
All right. Saturday afternoon, the Giants host St Kilda at Canberra, Manuka Oval. Saints on the rebound.
Sometimes called Manuka.
Oh, fuck, I always get that wrong. Saints, many believe, came back to earth with a pretty disappointing loss against Adelaide. I could sort of see it coming. I think a lot of Saints fans felt like we had defied expectations to that point. Adelaide aren't nearly as bad as everyone made them out to be. A lot of people picked them to be top four. But the Giants are humming along, and it's hard to pick. I'm going to pick the Saints because I'm a loyalist, but I would not be surprised if I take my Saints hat off for a while. This is the kind of game where we could spook the Giants, and I'd like to see us win.
Yep. Okay, I know the sense in which you mean that.
Yes.
Giants will win that by 8 goals.
Okay.
Don't worry, because you're about to return the favour to me on this game.
Saturday afternoon, up at the Gabatoir, the Lions take on a very weary Sydney Swans with no Buddy, I believe, 2 weeks in a row.
Yes, indeed. And it's fascinating because for years you've looked at the Lions, even up there as a, we'll just give us the 4 points. Last couple of years, Brisbane have played all right against us in Brisbane and got a win against us in one of those games. I'd really... I'd be very, very proud of our boys. The situation okay, there at the moment.
This is the most. This is like a politician speaking right now, dodging the question.
Yep. I just want to say exactly. There is no leadership challenge. The leader has my unconditional support, and I am confident that I'm confident I will be very proud of the effort my boys put in come siren time on Saturday.
I mean, imagine if they win. Like, how great would that be for the club? Like, it doesn't really matter if you don't win that many games. If you have a couple of wins like that against the odds, against a young upstart like that, away from home, enough to kind of like...
We'll take that.
Yeah, but I'm going to say the Lions were 8 goals. Okay, Saturday night.
Okay, so let's bet between us a side bet of a beer on a total margin. Right,
for which game?
So if the Giants and the Lions, whatever the total margin,
Giants and Saints and Lions and Swans,
exactly. So you know, so if you just say the Saints lose by 31 against the Giants and the Swans only lose by 16, I win the bet.
Okay, sure.
If the Saints win and the Swans lose, you win the bet. Yeah,
but we're playing a much better team. So. But we are a better that makes sense. Okay, all right. The Bulldogs take on the Tigers on Saturday night at Marvel Stadium.
Mm.
This is interesting. The Bulldogs weren't too bad last week. You probably didn't see that game either. They had a chance
preparation for a two guys, one cup that I didn't know I was doing.
Yeah.
I saw no football apart from the Swans last week. And also, I have a superstition. I never listen to your podcast after we've lost.
Yeah, right. Because you don't want to listen to us.
I don't even
want to
hear
this.
It makes no sense. Listen to the rest of the podcast, which is hilarious and fun, and just speed through the 4 minutes. Nah,
you won't do it.
Because who knows when you might
like
mention
that.
It.
I don't consume any media after a loss. Nah. I find it really, really hard, especially after last season where every fucking second story was about how we're doomed. Look, you'd have to pick the Tigers on form, and I will.
given that I am representing Will here, I will pick the Bulldogs, and that, Charlie, is my... lock of the week.
That's a much smarter way to do it.
I did actually just revert you then. You can just move the microphone down to your thigh and hit it with your hands.
Don't have to fillet yourself.
As opposed to auto-fillating.
Over at Optus Stadium, the West Coast Eagles host the Gold Coast Suns. And what is a perfect little fucking punch-up match for the Eagles? They've had a couple of really tough weeks. Their hardness has been questioned. So now they get a lovely little paper match. They just get to tear a team apart.
It's an important game for the Eagles here because...
They won't lose.
You've got to expect them to win it. But if this...
Can't lose. I mean, I cannot foresee... I don't know if you've seen the latest Avengers film, but Doctor Strange goes into the future and looks at 14 million outcomes and can only see one in which the Avengers win. I don't even think there's that chance of the Suns.
You don't think the Suns have a one
in 14 million.
14 million. So unless Sportsbet is offering $15 million on the Suns, If Sportsbet's only offering $9.5 million, you won't get on.
No way.
The only time I've ever bet on a football game was the Swans Collingwood prelim in 2012, heading out to Homebush. We've had the week off. They're hurt, and we are solid favourites to go through and play the grand final next week. And I'm walking in, and I really want us to win this. And I think we're going to win this. And I hope we'll win this. And I saw the odds they were offering on Collingwood were better than they should be for any team that's in a prelim. And I thought, how much money would I be happy to throw in the bin if it meant the Swans were going to a grand... And if I had to lose a prelim, how much money would I want to walk out of here with in my pocket?
Yeah.
And I bet on Collingwood in that game for an amount of money. I think I put $200 on, thinking, well, if I walk out with $580, it won't hurt quite as much as... And I would happily throw $200 away if it meant we went to the grand final. Ding.
That's what you're worth. That's what your heart's worth.
Exactly.
$580.
Yeah, you've got to go to the Eagles, don't you?
Yes. Okay, on Sunday, Carlton. Heartbroken Carlton against a very insipid North Melbourne. Shinboner spirits in short supply at Arden Street these days. What's the well's gone dry? I can't even do my Crackers Keenan impression because there's no Shinboner spirit. In fact, where is Crackers?
Crackers would get a game for them at the moment.
The well is dry.
Because they had quite a... You say last year, They had a start to the season last year that was, but even then fell off.
Well, the problem is optics this year. They had an out-of-the-box season last year where they finished ninth, and then they brought in a couple of high-profile, high-priced trades, and everyone expected them to be the natural graduation. But if you look at the competition over the last 5 years, Port Adelaide, Melbourne, teams seem like they're ready, and then they're not. Like, everyone just needs to chill the fuck out. Man, I don't know. I haven't seen enough North games because no one watches North games to know what their real problems are. And
the other thing I find fascinating about North, and I'm going to upset both North fans who listen to this, but North combine that arrogance and swagger of a traditional Melbourne club and everything they think deserve comes with that, with nothing to back it up. Not the financial status to back it up.
No.
Not the membership numbers to back it up. The crowds.
The swagger came from being the shin boners. I mean, they basically had two dominant eras in the 70s and then the 90s with Wayne Carey. And they were amazing teams in those eras. But that's where the swagger sort of comes from, is that, we are the little train that could. My children's books aren't great.
Yes.
Great. But they just seem uninspired this year. Carlton, on the other hand, although...
Big game for Carlton.
They've looked exciting. They've been in most games this year. But this is the kind of game that they'll fucking lose, and then Brendan Bolton will have to front the media. I'm going to pick North in this game. I don't know why.
Given they're both teams currently on the same win-loss as the Swans, and I'm picking the Swans to beat the Lions, I'm tipping a draw in this one, Charlie.
Oh, fuck. That must be our first draw tip for the season.
If they only get 2 points each and we win, we move one further spot up the ladder.
Okay, on Sunday afternoon, the Cats host Essendon. Probably the match of the round, would you say?
Gee, it's
more than Port and Collingwood, probably.
Giants, St Kilda's probably a match of the round.
In terms of how close the teams are.
As a mathematician, I cannot stomach first versus 10th being match of the
round. Yes, mate, but it's not a... Look, they're essentially third on the ladder, Essendon. Equal wins. So, look... Cats are just so impressive this year. It's so fucking annoying. The Cats have managed to do what the Swans haven't, which is regenerate. I don't know how they did it. Well, they got Gary Rowan. We should probably just take a moment to talk about
That's great.
A much maligned player. Oh. I mean, you always defended him to me. I was never a fan. I was never a fan of Gary Rowan. I just didn't know what his purpose was.
Yeah.
I didn't understand why
I couldn't be happier for Gary. I think Gary is also one of the great confidence players.
Right.
You stop the clock after 3 minutes of a game. If Gary Rowan's fumbled one and being caught holding the ball, he can be very, very quiet, sometimes on a big stage. If the first time Gary touches the ball, his laces out and he kicks a goal, then just...
But I think that's what's changed about his game this year. Now he's like he's always had the skills and the speed and the nous, but he's a dependable forward now. He's not that kind of flashy half-forward flanker who does a cameo. He's getting like high possessions and he's actually...
He's an amazing man.
It's like a different player.
He's a main man, Gary. Him and his wonderful partner... had a tragic event happen to them with a child that they knew wasn't going to live very long and all that. But it's the perfect time to go to a new club, go home, be around family, be happy, realise what matters. And I could, except when he plays us, I couldn't wish, if the season doesn't work out for the Swans and I saw Gary Rowan with a premiership medal, I'd be pretty relaxed about that.
Cats for mine.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
Last game of the round, the Adelaide Crows host a frighteningly good Fremantle Dockers. Who would have fucking thought that Ross the Boss, in the last couple of years, with all the shit he's copped and all the shit that Nat Fyfe's copped, they're looking fucking good. They beat GWS over here. They've held fort at home. This could be a good game. I think we played Adelaide back into form last week, and now they're going to be back at their home crowd, Sunday night footy, maybe Eddie... Two games after his 300th, we'll find that magic again. He'll be quite...
2 games after his 300th.
Well, because he lit up the Adelaide Oval in his 300th, but then he had a quiet game against us. So then it's like, well, maybe now he's back home. Maybe Eddie's now at that stage of his career where he only plays well at home.
Right.
Doesn't like to travel. My mum, as she got older, didn't really like to leave the neighbourhood, the suburb she lived in after a while.
She was good at home.
She was good, mate. We go to Eileen's pocket.
Yeah. You could never count out Eileen after a quiet week. Yeah. She would bounce back.
I'm going to pick the Dockers. No, I'm not. I'm going to pick the Crows. I changed that. I just had a precognition moment, and I saw Tex Walker dominating. It's the Crows for me.
It's an interesting game. I can't realistically see either of these teams finishing top four, and really at the pointy end of the season. But there's genuine top eight spots up for these teams, and it would be a big part of their forward journey. Yeah, I can't see a reason not to pick Adelaide.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I can see lots of reasons. Fair and good form, but I'll leave you to it, mate.
And to be honest,
there's nothing at stake. I don't know why I'm questioning you.
Yeah, and I, you'd probably struggle to construct a game I cared less about.
Did you not see who North was it? North Melbourne and fucking
Carlton.
Carlton.
No, I'd be happier about seeing North Melbourne lose.
Okay.
Ooh. I really don't care.
Does this stem back to like 97 96, or something?
96, yeah, 96. Yeah, no, there's just something.
I've never heard anyone hate North Melbourne before.
No, there's
it's like hating Tom Hanks.
No, that well, I, yeah.
All right, yeah, Jesus,
I'm not a big fan. No, there's something about. There is a genuine sense of entitlement on behalf of all the Melbourne-based teams.
Oh, yeah.
That until you've supported a team in a completely non-AFL town who've pulled themselves up by the bootstraps, you just don't get... Like the Anzac thing is amazing and all that. But just the thought that there are two teams who have the right every year...
You know there's going to be...
To like be a part of the official commemoration.
So many, like, Victorian listeners to this show go, listen to this fucking Sydney Bring supporter.
It. Bring it on.
Oh, my God. The animosity.
Yeah, yeah.
They have your bootstraps. Mate, you're propped up for 20-plus years.
I remember a couple...
Cola!
I remember
the Riverina! What are you talking about? Pulled yourself up by the bootstraps.
I remember a few years ago... When the Swans...
Eddie McGuire is having a bloody heart attack right now.
But the Swans, because I'm sure he listens. The Swans had a game. We went down to Melbourne and played poorly and lost by 70-odd at a time when Melbourne had not been great for a long time. And that Melbourne were up and about it. And there was something in the media that week saying, you know, if Melbourne can stitch together another... After a brutal 4 or 5 years... Melbourne can stitch another couple of wins together like this season, they'll go back up above 50,000 members and blah, blah. And at the time, the Swans were on 30,000 members. I remember thinking that if you are just gifted, if you can play that badly for that long and be two wins away from 50,000 members, you just don't even understand the extra couple of $1 million you're given each year and told, go and have a bit of fun with this.
Mm.
And you can't spend it on players, but everything else that is spent on. And in the case of North Melbourne, that's probably a harsh call, but just the sense of entitlement, the rarefied nature.
Oh, mate.
Mate, just the...
Are you looking in a mirror or what?
You're kidding me, aren't you?
Look, this seems like we've come to the end of the podcast. We've just hit the juicy part of the conversation. We might have to take this to another podcast.
But no.
I'm just fucking with you. It is the perception, though. That is what most people grumble about with the expansion teams. And I know you were South Melbourne before Sydney, but I think there's
a case that you can look at the financial and the drafting and all that that say a GWS has had, and the ongoing financial propping up of them and the Gold Coast. I don't think Sydney's in anywhere near the same boat.
You would have been in the 90s for sure.
Oh, absolutely.
When you got Ron Barassi and stuff.
Yeah, but you can't. I don't think you can go back almost 30 years to a non-professional era.
Fucking football fans have long memories. Are you kidding me?
Yeah.
You hold something against North Melbourne that was 23 years ago.
Yeah, that's different. Look, we probably need to wrap this up, Charlie. We've both got places.
All right. So we like to sign off with our favourite umpiring cliches. I'm going to say play on, not 15, and you can say?
Free kick, anyone but Sydney.